Welcome back to the Cult Film Showdown. We're starting a new mini-series within a series. We are going to be looking at the 1980s HBO series, The Hitchhiker. I am Jim Cotta, back for another journey through anthology television. And I am joined by Nick Boxer.
Nudity aplenty, looking forward.
And Jack Hall.
Sure, there's some pervert on IMDb who made a list of television shows with nudity. This was on the list. Our series that we're doing this time, which is nice after, you know, a bunch of Saturday morning cartoons.
There was almost no nudity on those.
Just Ramble's ass.
I think
at one time.
Yeah, exactly. I think the male lady on Pryor's Place had a nip slip, but it was fun doing those. We had done Masters of Horror two series ago, and that was a ton of fun doing anthology. Masters of Horror was based on really well-known directors and writers, as well as interesting cast members. And we looked for another anthology series that would kind of be in that ballpark, kind of in that space. So we looked at a ton and we settled on The Hitchhiker. Jack, can you tell us a little bit about The Hitchhiker?
Yeah, it is the first ever drama series produced by HBO. HBO was just had largely for self-produced products, had largely done stand-up specials. We're just starting to break into television shows. This and Dream On and a couple other things that they were just kind of rolling out there. And it was really testing the waters as to whether or not they could sustain a television show. And this series, it's very interesting. You mentioned Masters of Horror. It is also a horror kind of sci-fi kind of mystery thriller combination of surreal dreamlike anthology tales, very very much in the tone with the more adult tone, but the tone of something like The Twilight Zone with a moral message at the end. The Hitchhiker introduces you to the episode, The Hitchhiker ends the episode, and has nothing to do with the story in between. And so this ran from until 1987 on HBO, and then ran for another two seasons starting in 1989 on the USA Network. And it's got not a lot of really big name directors or writers, but it does have quite a few name actors. There either were name actors at the time, or more often were up and coming actors who got early roles in their career and went on to do something else. And there's quite a few of those. So it's an interesting choice, and I'm really interested to hear what you guys thought about this one, because it's the pilot. It's on YouTube. All of the entire series is on YouTube. Not great quality, but it's out there. And it's originally they had a different guy playing the Hitchhiker for the first three episodes. This is the re-edit with Paige Fletcher, who played the Hitchhiker, getting the re-edit that they put out for DVDs and syndication, with him replacing the original man who played the Hitchhiker, whose name I can't forget, Nicholas Campbell was. So,
all right.
Anything else you'd like to know?
I did find it interesting that what we're looking at is there were so many anthology type shows at this point, and they did all have that actor who's just about done their career, an actor who hasn't had their big break yet. Almost every one of these shows, I don't think Hitchhiker wasn't one of them, unfortunately, but John Carradine did 50 shows like this in his last years. Even did A Littlest Hobo, which is a Canadian family show about a dog. Nick, what happened?
Yeah, quite terrible show, I must say, if my memory serves.
Well, not the John Carradine episode, right? And not the Cameron Mitchell one either.
Yeah, but just you mentioned these shows, and I love these shows because you get quality older actors finding work. And I don't know, I don't think I would have discovered like Donald Pleasance or like that as early as I did if these shows didn't exist. I don't find it interesting. But yes, the plot of the pilot episode of The Hitchhiker. Our star is played by Bruce Greenwood. And he's a young man who, at the very start of the story, is marrying into wealth. His grandmother gives him a wedding topper / family heirloom knickknack of a wedding couple as a wedding gift, I guess, to his bride and him as they're being married. Of course, immediately, Bruce Greenwood, because he's marrying for wealth, starts cheating with the stepdaughter. Unfortunately, this wedding topper seems to have magical powers, and him and his wife are now bound together. And Bruce figures this out and plots an elaborate scheme to kill his wife to inherit the money so he can marry the stepdaughter. But of course, with magic, that does not go well, and the witch wife's bird ends up knocking him off as well, and it's not a happy ending.
Well, it is if you're cheering for the good guys, because he's the bad guy.
Yeah, but the rich wife still dies.
And the nothing happens to the stepdaughter. She's the one that actually does the murder, and she like totally walks away at the end.
Yeah, she actually would have all the money in the world in the end as well.
Yeah.
So she doesn't have the husband to share it with, nothing. Good point.
I thought the obvious direction of that would have been for her to like, oh, now I've got all the money, I'm going to do something to this statue. And that wasn't where they went. She really wanted to be with Bruce Greenwood, who was his mid to late 20s when he did this. He was quite a heartthrob in those days. I think he did St. Elsewhere just not long after this. One of my all-time favorite actors, terrific actor. And
that's one of the reasons you picked this episode, isn't it?
It is. Not only was the pilot, but it was really because Bruce Greenwood was in it, and he is just such a, great character actor. So many fantastic things over the last few years, especially in the last decade.
It's written by Lewis Chester, who is also the executive producer of the series. And he's gone on to, mainly he was working in B films. Now I think he's done recently nothing but Hallmark Christmas movies. Okay. Like this is a guy who's in it for the artistic merit. He's not just chasing the money. That's why he's done movies like Magical Christmas Ornaments, Very, Very Valentine, The Enchanted Christmas Cake, A Snowy Christmas, Christmas Movie Magic.
It's
sensational.
It's
Christmas.
Funny. I'm so far down Christmas the bean rabbit hole right now. I can't tell for sure if you're being facetious or not on that one.
No, these are real. These are real. The director, Ivan Nagy, was I believe from Berlin, something like that, German or something like that, or Australian director, who mainly did softcore porn things, but we all love him because he's the director of Captain America 2, Death Too Soon.
Oh, nice.
Oh, Heidi Fleiss's ex-husband.
Oh, is he really? my God.
Really?
I believe so.
That's awesome.
That's amazing. So what do we want to say about this show? We're having a different experience than we had in some of the other ones.
I had to stop it to check if I was watching the Red Shoe Diaries pilot halfway through.
Red Shoe Diaries was one we had was on the short list for what we were going to do, but for one reason or another. I got to say, like, this was groundbreaking. Like, the guy who has an affair with his stepdaughter while his soon-to-be wife is in the next room. Pornography has remade this plot like 1,000 times, and I bet you they don't get any royalties or anything for that. We joked about how we got back into the... we wanted to pick this series because we knew there was adult content, and specifically boobs in this series. It's like the opposite of the exploitation stuff that you're used to from, you know, later in the 80s or into the 90s of Skinamax, because it's just like, hey, there's nipples and that's it. Like, it's not there's no porny music. There's no lingering close-ups. Like, it's just, yeah, you can see your nipples. That's fine.
Actually, since we're talking about the sex aspect, did you find the sex shot really strange? Because you got the money shots, you know, when she first takes off her top and stuff. But then you have oddly framed shots and Bruce using his hand to hide breasts during the scene, which is just not done in Cinemax.
It did make me wonder if they were hedging that, if they wanted to pull the nudity out later or something.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, is they were leaving options because they didn't know what this show was going to be.
Mm-hmm. And they did sell it to syndication even before they put it on USA Network. So, I mean, they were having to take the nudity out at that time.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
So they may have done alternate takes or alternate edits, like, from the beginning.
Yeah. Luckily, we saw the takes with the nudity. And that Alisa Shirley, the young lady, the stepdaughter, mm-hmm. lovely young lady who had no career. If you're wondering, this, I think, might have been her career highlight. An episode of TJ Hooker.
Yeah, definitely the residuals from TJ Hooker. She had a small part in Space Hunter Adventures in the Forbidden Zone. And nine credits in her career.
Nine credits in her career. The last one, a film called Ballistic, where she played Hooker. I'm sure that was quite a role. Nevertheless. Lovely.
I believe I've seen her entire filmology.
Wait, bruh.
I may be a fan and didn't know it.
That would not surprise me at all. You've
experienced the whole oeuvre.
But, as an actual episode, I think it was well done, paced well. I could see why it would get picked up. I mean, there's nothing in this that you haven't seen a million times before. I referenced Twilight Zone earlier. It is like a low budget Twilight Zone type idea, you know, a morality play, as we say, but it's fine. It doesn't leave a lot making me go, oh, I can't wait to see the rest of this.
Pilot because it focused so much on the sex.
I think that may be a strong point. But
as what it is, the nudity is a strong pipe. But for what the show became and what the show is, it's a horror anthology. This episode is more softcore porn than a horror anthology, really.
Yeah, like it is interesting for its place in everything because it's not Outer Limits and it's not Twilight Zone and it's not Tales from the Crypt. Like it's a half hour anthology. Like Twilight Zone was for most of its run and the 80s version of Twilight Zone. But it is a much simpler morality play, as you said, Jack. You got to really get to it in 25 minutes. Like this is a
Yeah.
short story. So I think that yeah, we've got to be prepared that the characters are going to be painted with a thick brush. Wide brush? Wide brush, I think that's the term. Painted with a wide brush so that 'cause yeah, you don't have time to get into it if you're going to have any kind of story. Everyone's going to have one motivation.
No, I mean the key for like the Twilight Zone, why it was so brilliant within 25 minutes was they consistently had interesting concepts, and so it was the concept, not necessarily the characterization, because you didn't have time in 25 minutes to have deep characterization, as you say, you know. So it was the concepts were consistently strong. This concept was, I don't know for sure that I've seen it before, but I'm 90% sure that I've seen it before, you know.
I think the ending is
And
different than I've seen, but yeah, like the
yeah, I'll
story's
give
very
that.
familiar, yeah.
When he's falling down because the bird, the crow, a raven, or was it a crow? A raven?
Uh,
What was
magpie.
was a yeah, it was well, it was a house pet, so
it? Okay. Whatever, the bird, the blackbird of whatever kind, that gets on there and is scraping at his face, and now he's getting cut and he's bleeding while he's making love to the stepdaughter, and he runs outside and the statue falls, so he falls. He falls down the steps, and right at the end, becomes a statue that falls apart. That
him
was
turning to
interesting.
porcelain was a very surprising choice.
It's as soon as he had killed or they had partnered up to kill the wife, I'm like, where the hell do you put that thing? Like, you know that your life is in this thing's hands. You can't seal it anywhere. You can't bury it. You can't put it in a safe deposit box.
Did
Like, what
anyone
the hell
else
do you do with this
question
thing?
the logic of his plan to kill the wife to suffocate the statue, but he would survive because he had an oxygen tank on? Yeah.
It's
I
what
thought that was kind of clever.
it makes sense on the surface, but you're right that it's lack of oxygen is not what's happening to her because she's surrounded by oxygen. So whatever's happening can't be that.
Wait, you just blew my mind. That's a good point.
And I mean the test of like he didn't even test this out. Like there was no trial run.
He was so fast on this, yeah. He's like, oh, I scratched it. There's a scratch on my arm. I like that he has to clarify that. I had a nail and I scratched and now there's like scratch. And she's like, so? He's like, oh no, I scratched the statue. Now there's a scratch on my arm. Like,
And she
oh,
just
okay.
goes with it,
It
like,
just
oh
absolutely that is all the proof she needs to conspire to kill her stepmom. She's like, I'm in. I'm in. I want to be with you, guy I just met, who the only thing I know about is that you sleep around in your fiance. That's a Romeo and Juliet type story if
yeah,
Romeo
no, it's
meets
as
Romeo.
romantic as it gets.
I also
I've
was
seen.
kind of wondering why they always had a doctor hanging out at the house.
Because the wife or the mother is older. And not so old that they decided not to use to get her naked too. I mean, but older. I mean, that actress is still working too. Canadian.
Okay.
She mainly does like French movies, but she's French Canadian, I think, Montreal. And that actress, Sandra Stewart, still working.
And Yeah, I like that, you know, she's kind of shown as like the older woman with the younger man, but she's like in her 40s.
At most.
Yeah, she's born in 1939. So yeah, she would have been like 43, 44 when she did this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so people look different as they aged back then. But an enjoyable first step. So curious where it goes from here, where, as Jack said, if you go to the Call Film Showdown YouTube channel, hit playlists, and there's a playlist there of all 10 episodes that we're going to do of The Hitchhiker, and in the order that we're going to do them. So you can watch along, you can watch ahead, and hear what we've got to say about them. You can hear everything we say and then watch them. You could even do both at the same time if that's your thing. Multitasking. I mean, you're gonna, it's true multitasking, because you're not gonna do either one of them very well if you do that, but but you'll give it a shot. All right, well, we're gonna move on to the next one. So the next time we'll be with you, we'll be doing The Hitchhiker. And we'll use the numbers from the episode numbers that are used on IMDb. I've seen a couple of different lists, but season 2, episode 10. So we're jumping a little bit. Murderous Feelings is the name of this episode. So we are the Cult Film Showdown. You can find us, as I said, on YouTube. You can also support us on Patreon. And we are on Instagram. We are sponsored by WeTalkPodcast.com, the home of the Octagon, our search for the ultimate B-movie. And We Talk Podcasts has a Facebook, and they have a Twitter, or an X, if and that's the way you go. Any last thoughts?
No thoughts. I had no first thoughts.
Do we have a...
The boobs were nice.
Do we have... Do you want to do a podcast name like at the end of the episode? Like,
yeah.
Shattered Showdown. I think I liked Hitchhiker's Guide to the Cult Film Showdown, but it does not fit anywhere. That's a mouthful.
Ceramic heat I'm working with, but
oh, that's not bad. That'll be a good show image, is to pull out just a shot of the smashed up ceramic body of Bruce Greenwood.
There you go.
All right, we'll talk to you next time.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wouldn't the Oscars be better served if by the end it had girls bouncing on trampolines?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'd like to bring back Battle of the Network Stars too, if we're making requests.